Hello everyone, and here we are in Parashat Behar. Behar, it's a shot from Behar Sinai on Mount Sinai. However, it's a very powerful parasha because it's usually, when it's not a leap year, Behar Bechukotai are together, and this is the end of the reading of the book of Leviticus. Because we had a leap year, we had to add some more four parashot, so we read Parashat Behar. This Shabbat in Israel, and next one is Bechukotai, and we finish the book of Leviticus. Now, Parashat Behar is very short, one of the shortest parashot in the whole Torah. Only 57 verses. But 57 is a magical number that whoever knows Kabbalah knows what it is about, because if you know the Ana Bekoach, the one of the most powerful and prayers and meditations, the third line of the Ana Bekoach, Na Gibor Dorshei Yechudecha Kevavat Shomrem, the initials are divided into two groups, three and three. Na Gibor Dorshei Nun Gimel Daled Yechudcha Kevavat Shomrem Yud Kavshin. Nun Gimel Daled is for sustenance. The numerical value of Nun Gimel Daled is 57. Nun Gimel Daled in Hebrew is Nagad, which means to resist. To resist. And we know that the light does not reveal in the light bulb if there's no resistor. Any electrical machine does not reveal unless there is a resistance. Okay? Same thing, when a person wants to have a financial success, he needs to have the quality of resistance. Now, it is known, there's a very famous research, it's called the marshmallow test, that when you check, it was done many years ago, you check little kids, 3-4 years old, and you show them a pile of marshmallows. And you ask them, I want you to make a choice. What do you want? One marshmallow now, or if you wait for an hour, you can get the whole pile. They found out that the kids that resisted the urge to get the marshmallow now, and they're willing to delay gratification and to wait without the marshmallow for an hour, when they grew up, they were much more successful as grown-ups. Which means people who have the ability to overcome and resist their immediate urges, they have better ability to have success in all ways of life. And we know that. People go into crime because they want something. They don't have the patience to make it on their own, so they want the easy grab. And so they take it from someone else, and sometimes they're being caught. If they are not being caught, they are not going to keep it, and that's why they have to steal again or cheat again. So, you know, the whole thing about sustenance and the flow, the number is 57, and this is the number of verses in this parasha, which has a lot of secrets about financial flow, any kinds of flow, especially financial. How do we see that? The name of the parasha, as we said, is Behar Sinai, although in many places just the word Behar appears. And if that's what it means, which means Behar means in the mount, what does it mean for us? You have to remember, the beginning of the parasha, we are reading in the book of Leviticus, chapter 25, verse 1. Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe, and God spoke to Moses, Behar Sinai, in the mount of Sinai, therefore the name, saying, Lemor, verse 2, Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'amarta aleim, ki tavou el haaretz asher ani noten lachem v'shavta aretz. Speaking about the story of, or the laws of, seventh year is sabbatical for the earth, only in Israel. However, we know that all the mitzvot, all the laws, have been given to Moses and then to the whole nation on Mount Sinai. Why does it have to add the word Behar Sinai over here? Especially that the Shemitah, the 1 year to leave the land fallow without working, that's only applies in Israel. Mount Sinai is not in Israel. And Rashi, the greatest commentator, he lived in France in the 11th century. And he says something very special because he says, Ma inyan shmita lehar Sinai. What's the deal between shmita and Mount Sinai? If you know Hebrew, what in English they say, that's apples and oranges. When you're talking about like this, this has nothing to do with each other. What you're mixing, two things that have nothing in common. So in English you say, you know, what you're dealing with, talking about apples and oranges. In Hebrew, Rashi, 1,000 years ago, they still in Hebrew. We don't say in Hebrew, or apples and oranges, tapuchim ve'tapuzim, there's no saying like this. But you say, when you speak nonsense and you speak about two things that have nothing in common, you say, Ma inyad Shemitah al-Har Sinai. These two things, what is Shemitah has to do with Mount Sinai? Okay, and that's Rashi's question. Of course, Rashi never brought anything for himself. He just was a genius. He knew by heart all the laws, the writings on the Mishnah, the Talmud, the Haggadah, everything that was written in the thousands of years before, he just put them together. He made it easier for us that we don't have today we have computers, you can make search. He did it 1,000 years ago for us. So the question is, so what's the thing about Mount Sinai and the Shemitah? Because with all the laws, it doesn't say, because it's, you know, we received everything on Mount Sinai. What's the connection? And the connection is, we start with the name of the parasha, Behar. Numbers again. The numbers here, you have Bet of Behar is 2, Hey is 5, Reish is 200, 207. If you know Kabbalah, you know the 207 is the same number as Or, light. How do you reach the light? How do you reach the light? And here comes the study that we have over here. Now, because you have to remember, if the Torah is eternal, that's the assumption, which means everything written is eternal. Now that there's no temple, you live in Israel, but you're not a farmer. Only a very small minority of Israelis. Today with technology, you don't need so many farmers to make the same amount of food, even more than that. Only a few percent are farmers. What if you're not a farmer? What if you live outside of Israel? Leaving the land without work, a sabbatical once every 7 years, it's meaningless for most people. So what's in it for me? And the answer is like this. We will see it. It says, talk to the children of Israel and tell them that on the 7th year, you have to leave the land without any work. Which means, you can't even, let's say you have a vineyard. You can't get in. So the vineyard, you don't have to plant it every year all over again. So the year of the sabbatical year, the Shemitah, is coming in. And it's not called sabbatical, it's called Shemitah. So soon we'll see what does it mean. Comes, and then you can't prune the vineyard and collect and sell it. No way. You can't do that. You can take some, you can go and take some home to eat, but no more than that. Okay? What am I going to make a living of? So you're supposed to make a living during the 6 years. You know, same thing. You know, a person works till he's 60-something in most countries. And now, you know, most people live for another 10, 20, 30, 40 years after that. What are you going to live on? If I'm, you know, by law, I have to quit. In most places, you quit when you reach the, retirement. You have to retire. You make enough during the years that you're working, so you have time for your sabbatical, right? What if you don't work? You know, that's a story about the ant and the grasshopper. The ant worked the whole season collecting the food. Then the winter came. No food for the grasshopper. They didn't collect anything, just had the fun. You know, that's about this. Still, the story goes on. For 6 years, you work. On the seventh year, you're not working. And then, what do? Study. What else can you do? Okay. And then you do, but also, that's not enough. 7 years you work. And the same, and then you should count for you, seven cycles of 7 years. And on the 50th year, that's not a sabbatical, that's called a jubilee. Or in Hebrew, yovel. Yovel, jubilee, is a Hebrew word. Of course, English, they have to, like in Jerusalem, it's Yerushalayim. You turn the I into J, and then you get it. Okay. So, the jubilee, of course, sabbatical to the whole land. It's even more than a regular seventh year. And then, of course, I know what you're thinking about. Okay? Because the Torah is relating to it exactly. And it says, okay, on chapter 25, verse 20, it says in simple Hebrew, that every child today can understand, V'chi tomru ma nochal b'shana ha'shvi'it. And if you ask, what are we going to eat on the seventh year? Helo nizra velo nosof et tvorotenu. We cannot plant the seeds, we cannot plant trees, and we cannot collect the harvest. Vetziviti et birchati lachem, that's verse 21. Vetziviti et birchati lachem, I'll command my blessing to you. Bashana shishit, vasat et atvua leshalosh shanim. And on the sixth year, you're going to have enough food for 3 years. Okay? וזרעתם את השנה השמינית ואכלתם מן התבואה ישן עד השנה התשיעית. So you plant on the eighth year, but you don't have food yet, right? You have to wait till the eighth year is over. So till the ninth year, you'll have enough food from the sixth year. עד בו תבואתה תאכלו ישן. Okay. This is a, you know, you need a lot of faith, right? You need, it's a totally different planning. Now let's go back to the name of the seventh year. The name of the seventh year is Shmita. It's coming from the Shoresh Shin Mem Tet, Shamot, which means let go. Lashmit means to let go. You're holding on to something. Lishmot means let go of it. You have a grip on something. Usually when you have a grip, release. That's what Shemot is about. Isn't that what we're talking about? Okay? And what kind of personal self-control you need in order to have your field standing in front of you and you calculate how much money you could have made if you planted, or if you just, you know, some farmers, they don't plant every year. They're just having... They have plants, okay, avocado, whatever, all of this, and vineyards, grapes, oranges, olives in Israeli economy, okay. This is tough. We understand that we need a lot of faith because over here it says clearly, don't worry. You'll have more in the sixth year. You'll have enough till the ninth year. And what if it's a jubilee? It's 2 years in a row that you're not working in the field. Okay? 2 years you're not collecting the crops. 2 years you're not planting, you're not plowing, you're not planting. So, the Zohar is explaining that in a very powerful way. And explains a lot about our relationship with the world around us. What does it say? It's starting from a quote from Parashat Mishpatim in the book of Exodus. The beginning of Parashat Mishpatim is Ki tikne eved ivri sheshanim yavod. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he will work for 6 years, and on the seventh year, he will go free. Okay? Yetzel lechofshi chinam. Okay, and what does it mean? He speaks over here that on the seventh year, this is the time for rest. And it's called Shabbat Haaretz, the Shabbat of the land. What is that related to? The Shabbat of the week. 6 days, Sheshet Yamim Asher Bara Elokim Lasot, 6 days that God created for action, for doing. On the seventh day, you rest. Why do you have to rest? What if I'm not tired? Okay? I know a lot of people, they get tired from resting. Right? They are in perfect state when they are on the go, on the move. You just shut them down in a place, you can't go, you can't do it, just sit there, they go crazy. Okay? What is this rest about? And the answer is that when the world was created, we learned many times, it was created because the Creator is perfect. The world was created perfect. And the world was completed to be created on day one, as it says, and there was a night, there was a day, one day. What's one when there's no another? What's first when there's second? One day. And it says when there was a day, there was a night, there was a night, there was a day, one day, which means the Zohar says, the ups and the downs are one. The light and the vessel are one. That's one day. Everything is one. When everything is one, it's supposed to be the end of story. Game over. Everything is one. Everything is a perfect state of rest. Why? When are you moving? When you need something. When everything is perfect, there's no need. There's no move. You don't go anywhere. However, we learn, that's one of the basic teachings in Kabbalah, that because He, the Creator, created us in His image, we got His image. He created the perfect creation, we got His image. Of course, He has no physical image, but we got the image of the Creator that we can understand, which is He is the Creator and He's always giving. Now, when you want to create, when you love to create, and you know, people love when they create, and they love when they're in a giving state, and I said it many, many times, you meet thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you never meet selfish, happy people. The only ones who are really, truly happy are the ones who are givers. The takers are never happy. That's why they're takers. It's never enough. As much as you take and you invest so much in taking, you always stay with a big hole inside, empty, which is a wonder, okay? People are like overweight, and they eat, and they eat, and they eat. They eat more than anybody else, and they're still more hungry, okay? So now, let's go back to our issue. We couldn't get the idea that we cannot create and we cannot share. Why? Because if everybody is in a perfect state, so there's nothing to create, everything is there. There's no one to share with because everybody, it's a seller's market. So the Tzimtzum had to come over. And the Tzimtzum meant separating everything, creating a mess. And you read in the Torah, chapter 1, second day. What did it say on the second day? The Creator on the second day just separated. He separated the heaven and the earth, the light and the darkness, the seas and everything. Why? Why He separated? So when things are separated, we bring them together and that makes us so happy. So the point was that when on the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day, by the sixth day things were so separated, there was a fear that we will stick to it and we'll never go back home. So we'll forget where we're coming from. So something had to be done to stop the mess, to stop the action. And then Shabbat has been created. What was created on Shabbat? The state of mind of rest. What does it mean rest? The ability to see things from a completion state of mind, from a place that everything is whole. And that is a special creation of Shabbat. That's why we say to each other on Shabbat, Shabbat Shalom. Because shalom means in Hebrew when everything is complete. Shalem. Everything is a complete state. So on Shabbat, we have the opportunity to reconnect to the original oneness. So we will reconnect to our main original goal. Our goal is to be a whole, not to be a part. And being a whole means hard work, and it needs also a lot of self-restraint. It means that's a paradox. You want to become a whole, you have to overcome a lot of your immediate urges to hurt others, to take from someone without giving back. When you see people around you as a whole, there's a community, there's a participation, there's a cooperation. Then you start realizing that being a part is a sick state. Being a whole is a normal state. And reaching that place is reaching the utmost capacity of a human being. When you realize that hurting somebody else hurts you, taking from someone else, it's taking from you. And when you take just for yourself, you stay in void and emptiness. So the same way every 7 days we have to come to that halt for rest, every 7 years, there's another cycle like this. Okay, so what about that? Come and see. Bore, says Azor. Hey, hi menucha shel elyonim v'tachtonim, u'mishum ze yesh hey elyona v'havaya, שיבינה והיא תחתונה שהיא מלכות. Okay. When we're looking about the tetragrammaton, it symbolizes the upper worlds. The letter Yud, as was explained many times, symbolize, the letter Yud is a small, tiny, the tiniest letter. It's like a dot. That symbolizes, says the Zohar, like the spring, the place the water come out from. It's a dot. It's a dot, but it's very powerful, very concentrated. The water comes out, and then it comes out into a pool that collects the water. From the pool, you have aqueducts that go to the fields. So the pool is the upper hay, Sfirat Bina, and the aqueducts are this is the letter Vav, that looks like a pipe. And then it comes, and then the water pours into the fields, which is the last hay, the recipient. So we have two recipients over here. The upper hay, which is the pool receiving the water from the spring, and we have the fields that receive the water from the aqueducts, from the water pipes, okay? So both are receivers, both are hay. But they both symbolize a frequency of certain special light of fulfillment. And what does it mean? Now, to translate what I just explained, the upper hay and the lower hay, they symbolize rest. Because when do you have rest? When you are connected to the light. You can eat a lot of food, but there's no spirituality over there. It will never satiate you. The more you eat, the more hungry you become. You make money. The more money you collect just from a selfish, greedy need, the more money you have, the more lack you're going to feel, the more hungry you're going to be to make more money, but it's never going to satisfy you. Paradox. You want satisfaction, you need to know how to say enough. To say, and for immediate and self-gratification. And that's what Shabbat is about. It's about, okay, we made enough. Now it's time for sabbatical. Yeah, but you know, everybody is outside. It's like the malls are open. People are making money. I'm behind the race. You go home. You make Shabbat. It's time to study, to pray, to meditate, to eat with your family, with your friends, whatever. The world will wait for you. How come the world is not going to wait for me? How do you know? You look, Jews made pretty much amount of money, and they didn't work on Shabbat. The proof is, the fact you're not working on Shabbat, the ones who worked on Shabbat, well, they didn't stay Jewish for the next generation, it was over. The ones who are still Jewish, it means that their forefathers, for the last few thousand years, living all over the world, they still made more money, And usually we had to, you know, the taxes were much higher for Jews and stuff like this, and we still made enough to move, to go on. So that is a show that Shabbat is not just bad luck. It's not just bad luck. Somehow, on Shabbat, you get the light, and then it manifests itself during the weeks. Why? Because Shabbat gives you the feel. Where is sustenance? Where can you find it? It gives you the inspiration, the muse, the ability, the power, the energy, and also the sixth sense, where to look. If it smells like Shabbat, if it tastes like Shabbat, you're in the right direction. If it smells too chaotic, don't go there. It's like putting good money after bad money. But if it doesn't smell like Shabbat, so you're not supposed to go there. On Shabbat, you learn to smell something that is a whole. Something that is a whole, a business that is structured as a whole, has longevity. A business that is structured on chaos, pain, negativity, and imbalance doesn't stand for long. Okay? How do you tell? On Shabbat. That's where you connect to it. Now, says there are two kinds of Shabbat. There's the upper one, there's a low one. That's the two haze. There's a light of Malchut, and there's light of Bina. And the light revealing in these two letters, basically they symbolize the two kinds of light of real feeling of rest. When is it rest? You know, a person can be, you know, he takes a vacation, he has a rest, he's resting next to the pool the whole day long. He doesn't have to go to the dining room. Somebody brings him the food. He doesn't have to bother. Is that a guarantee that you're going to rest? No, especially not today. Today you can rest by the pool and fight the whole day long with friends, family, and so on. Yeah, with a telephone. And you know what? You don't have to fight. You just read the newspapers through your phone. Okay? And you fight with the whole world because you can't agree with that, can't agree with that. That, you know, a lot of people read the newspapers to get upset. If they didn't get the portion of upset for the day, they didn't do their job. It's like they didn't fulfill their religious duty to get upset about how the world is being run and by these morons that are running the banking system, the treasury, the government, whatever, you just name it. They know better. Okay. But that, the Zohar leads us to another place. And it says, this is a secret. And that's how we learn. Ketuv. One of the arguments that Moses had with the Israelites in the desert was that the Israelites were saying to Moses, Zacharnu et hadaga shenucha b'Mitzrayim chinam. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt for free. For free? You were slaves. Oh, and we didn't have to pay. You didn't have to pay? You know, when you are a slave, you don't have to pay the bills. You don't have to be worried about them. The master has to pay the bills. He has to be worried about buying the food. You don't have to be worried about it. Yeah, you have to work really hard, but you are keeping what they say in Hebrew, a small head. You have no worries. You just have to do what you're being told. But the small picture, the big picture, the master has to take care of it. And so what does it mean? We ate the fish for free. We didn't have to worry where to bring the fish from. Right? How to cook the fish. Well, the master had to be worried about it. That's a superficial way. So what was so great about it? You know, there's something. A lot of people, you know, there was a, whoever saw the movie Shawshank Redemption, was this guy who was in prison for so many years. And finally, he was old already, and his prison sentence was over. And he goes, and now he lives in a little apartment in the city. He's lonely. Nobody needs him. He sees no one. Nobody cares about him. In the prison, he ran the library. Everybody, he needed his favors. So he hung himself. Why? It was easier to be a slave as a prisoner. You know your place, you didn't have to be worried about stuff. And people liked you because you did the job for them, but you didn't get any wages for that. A lot of people don't leave the work. They're being abused, stepped on, whatever, but they won't leave. Why? It's cold outside. You'll have to take responsibility. You have to worry about your own savings and your own bills, whatever, because, you know, some companies, they take care for you for everything. You know, there's a plus in that. But there's also a minus. There's a payment. When somebody takes care of everything, sooner or later, somebody is going to abuse that power they have, ruling over your life. Bore, come and see. The Zohar says, but there was a deeper meaning to it. What does it mean, chinam? Chinam is we ate without making a blessing. Why do you have to make a blessing of the food? Let's say I'm a slave. I made a blessing. I don't have to make a blessing over the food. But I worked for it. And that's why it's like this. Whatever you do in life as a human being has two dimensions. One is the dimension of self-responsibility on this plane. But humans are made of two dimensions. There's also the metaphysical dimension. And that means that it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. Which means you go to a restaurant. It happened to be that you made the order, then you went to the bathrooms. On the way, you passed by the kitchen. And it happened to be that the kitchen door was open, and you heard the cook and all his helpers fighting like there was so much hate in the kitchen. They were cursing each other, throwing things at each other. Now, do you want to go back and to eat that food? If you know what I mean, you can look in Google or in YouTube, the rice consciousness test. What do you do with that? It's very famous, there are many videos about it. You make rice, a pot of rice. Then you divide it into three jars. On one jar, you write love. On the other jar, you write hate. And the middle jar, the third jar, you write control. Okay? So the jar with... So some of the ones I saw lately was the jar which it said love. That person made the experiment. He took that jar every day and he spoke words of love to that jar. And thought only loving thoughts and emotions, projecting them into the jar. And that's someone who has no background in any spirituality. Okay? The jar with says hate on it, he took it out every day and just thought about all the stuff that makes him hateful. And he said, I hate you, I'm supposed to kill you, whatever, stuff like this. And the control was back to ignore. That's control. So what happens was, that the jar that was hated every day got moldy and pretty awful looking already in a few days. And when you're talking about 30 days, that was like rotting with juices and stuff. It was really in an advanced stage of rotting. The jar that says love on it, after a month, it looked fresh and you could just go and eat it. And the jars with the control, after a week or two, it started to get some moldy, but like in the corners, but it was not really in a very advanced stage of decay after 30 days. So, what do you learn from that? You learn from that food gets consciousness. So it's not just what was put in the food, it's also, and mostly, the consciousness put in the food. Some people could be like really great chefs and they make those amazing, but you know, some of the chefs are really like this diva. They have such ego, forget it. Like beyond any. So they get, and you read about it, they once very, you know, they can't stand when somebody in the kitchen does not give them the honor, the respect, whatever, and then there's anger and stuff like this. What happens? What gets into the food? Anger, hate, upset, frustration. Who likes to eat that? So people will say, you know, the food is amazing, but they won't come back. Or they won't taste good food because we are sensitive creatures, although we won't admit it. You know, some people said, you know, I don't believe in that stuff. This is nonsense, really nonsense. So, you know, so would you eat that food that was made in the kitchen? Well, of course I would eat. That's a good chef. I don't know if they're lying or just for the principle they say it. But I asked them, you know, tell me the truth. You want to move to a new house. You're going to buy the house. Perfect price, perfect location. The house is amazing. But then you meet the neighbor and you ask the neighbor, you should do that when you buy a house. You ask the neighbor, what was going in that house? And neighbor said, oh, this is everybody in the neighborhood calls this house the cursed house. He says, why? He says, like, you know, the last few years, there were a few families who moved in. Each one of them had to sell the house because of another disaster. Cancer, suicide, collapse, whatever. So every family moves in like a perfect happy family, and then they just retreat from the battlefield. It looks like they are finished when they move out. Few people passed away, two people committed suicide, many people had cancer in this house. In the last years, this is like outrageous. No one wants to even get close. And I ask people, would you buy that house? In that moment, even the most like insensitive people, they say they believe in nothing. You see, they're like, they want to say, of course, they can't. Why? Because deep inside, you are a spiritual creature. You are a creature of energy. And you know deep inside that this is important for you. Vibes are more important than intellect. How do we know? There was this guy, Daniel Kahneman. He got a Nobel Prize. For what? Proving that most people, when they make the decisions in any case of economy or financial state, it's not rational. Most people, most of the time, don't make rational decisions about finances. It's all coming from intuition. That's how you can explain all kinds of weird situations in the history of mankind, because it's coming from opinion, not from the real state of the market. An opinion is being manipulated by the media, and all kinds of, you know, governments and stuff like this, they manipulate people's consciousness, and that creates economy. Okay? If you can do it bad, you can do it also good. Which means if you manipulate your mind properly positive, then that will have a physical positive effect on your everyday life, behavior, and good luck or good fortune. So it says, what the Israelites were saying to Moses in Egypt, we had no yoke. We had no responsibility for the two dimensions of this universe. I was hungry, I ate. Now you tell me I have to be responsible. How I eat the food, what kind of food that I eat. And not just this. If I am conscious of what I do, what I say, how I eat, how I create, that has a ripple effect on people that don't even know I exist. Because we are creatures of two dimensions. And when you have people, and that was also tested and shown, when you have a whole bunch of people meditating on positivity and love and peace and so on, the whole city will be affected by it. I did the test twice, and it worked twice. It needed 100 people. I did a test with a bunch of people, 100 people, in Toronto, 1990. Toronto was flooded with, there were so many cases of murder. Nobody understood. They were every day on the news was how many people were murdered by now. And I had my first group of community that I created as their teacher. I said, guys, you have to believe you can do it. You meditate on Kafa Itaf, removing negativity and all kinds of violence from the city of 4 million people. A year later, they were like really united. There was a lot of energy in the meditation and the prayers together. I'm saying to myself, you know, sometimes you need to. My teacher said, sometimes you believe in it, you believe in it, you know, it's you have total certainty, but there's part of you want to see the physical proof. And I have this thought. It's the end of December, a year later. I get in the car, open the radio. First thing on the news, the murder rate in Toronto that year dropped 30%. Nobody knows what's the reason. So that could be. That could be like, you know, that's not scientific. You have to repeat to make it scientific. Years later, I move to Florida. We open another group now in Boca Raton, Florida, which is South Palm Beach County. I tell them, guys, we have a test. We are going to work every day standing light, cafe tough, removing chaos, removing pain, removing violence from Palm Beach County. A year later, the crime rate went down 30%. I remember car thefts went down 50%. Okay? And nobody could understand why. So I can go on with that stuff. You can repeat that. Just 100 people. United, loving. And by the way, it says in the Zohar, when Rabbi Shimon is asking, how come we had the merit to reveal the most amazing secrets of the Torah that have not been revealed since Mount Sinai in our generation? And Rabbi Shimon says, because we had unity among us, our group, we had love, and that what opens the heaven so the secrets can come out, come down, and they welcome me better. People have no idea how powerful the mind is, especially if you exercise it, if you take responsibility. Moses is taking a whole nation of slaves, brings them to the desert, and says, guys, you have to realize you have responsibility. You have a yoke. The yoke is you're not just here to eat and breed. You're not an animal. You're not a slave. You have to take responsibility as a co-creator. And many Israelites didn't like the idea. It was better when I don't have the yoke. Why do I have to need the yoke? So the Zohar says, continues, Alken, that's why it says that a slave in the physical world, somebody who was a slave, like, you know, there was slavery in America till 1863 or something like this, and in still some countries there, but a slave is exempt of the mitzvot. Why? You have already one master. You cannot be responsible for your destiny because you're a slave. In order to have the yoke and the responsibility of revealing spiritual light in the world, you have to be a free human being. Okay? But that means, kibotok, it's like an ox, says the Zohar, ukeoto ashor shenotnim alav tchila ol kedei la'avod imo. It's like the ox that they put a yoke on him so they can work with him. He can carry, pull the weight and stuff like this. Lotzi mimeno tov la'olam. So that ox can bring some good to the world instead of just eating the whole day for himself alone. Vimeno mekabel alav olahu. But if the ox, you know, some oxen, they do not accept any yoke, like rodeo. They have a rodeo forever. You can't put a yoke on them, so they're useless. What happens to an ox that is useless? They slaughter him. At least by this, he brings something good to someone, that the food that he ate will nourish somebody else. Okay? Same thing with a human being. If you want to be of help in your life, you have to accept the yoke. What yoke? The responsibility to bring spiritual consciousness to the world in every action that you do. Every action has two dimensions. The physical aspect and the consciousness you instill inside it. Which means when you say something, when you think something, when you don't say, when you build something, everything that you do, you have to do it with the consciousness of bringing light, enlightenment to the world, because it has a ripple effect and it affects other people around you. And you have no idea how many, what's the diameter of effect Because the Talmud says you can affect the whole world even. You can even tilt the scale of the whole planet, of all of humanity, just one action. Okay, that's how powerful it is. And you should behave like the person who has that responsibility. However, that yoke does not dwell on someone that is dependent on the other. What's the other? The evil inclination, on darkness. When I feel like cheating, I will cheat. When I feel like stealing, I will steal. When I feel like cursing, I will curse. When I feel like being miserable, I'll be miserable. When I feel like feeling like a victim, I'll be a victim, whatever. I just do whatever I feel. You have no yoke. You're just a wild animal, right? In that aspect, because wild animals, they do have a yoke. Wild animals, says the Talmud, will never do something against the Creator. How do we know? You leave animals alone, they will never create a mess. Nature, look at nature. The mess starts when people come in, not when animals are there. You leave the place, the animals will finally tidy the place. That's what they've done. They have the yoke, but they don't have to. They don't have the consciousness. They are robots. They are planned to do that, right? What the Talmud says, a mosquito, even when they bite, they do it to hurt. They do what they're supposed to do. Okay? So a mosquito will never go and join the dark side. Every creature has a place. You know, when you study ecology, you realize how balanced perfectly the environment is till people come in. For people to not get the environment out of balance, they have to take the yoke, which means they have to overcome. You know, why there is like environmental issues? It's all about greed. It's all about taking what you don't have to, what you don't need, eating as much as you don't need, whatever. All of this stuff is getting out of balance. And therefore, those are basically the basics of the whole book of Leviticus. It's about finding your way. You will never find your way. That's the paradox. You want to find your freedom. You have to get the yoke of responsibility to what you say, how you eat. Everything you do has an impact on both dimensions of this planet. If you don't accept that yoke and this responsibility, the result is that you don't have rest. You're doomed. All the greatest food in the world, you see people running from one restaurant to another, one Michelin restaurant to another. Oh, this restaurant. And they're never satiated. You see people running from making another deal, billions are coming in. It's never enough. Why it's never enough? They buy this car, another car. I know people like so many cars. How many cars can you drive? And they're still not satiated. It's a curse, because the moment you have no yoke to create holiness in this world, you are a slave of the dark side. You cannot resist the temptations, not financially, honesty, for instance, not physically on food, not sexually, and then the more power you have, the more hell you're going to experience because of no self-control. Because you have no ability to reject nagad, to reject your need for self-gratification. If you don't do that, as we learned in previous parashot, you cannot create returning light. And returning light is the only vessel that is lasting on this universe. Which means I wanted it so much, and I said no. Not now, not this way. It has to be with others. It has to be with grace. It has to be with chesed, with giving and loving. I can't just take it because I want it. It's not enough. And then the Zohar adds, and what about the yoke I have, the responsibility for enlightenment of mankind? Yeah, but if I just, you know, I do whatever I feel like, nobody sees. You effect the network of all mankind of spiritual light. And when your network falls, then the grid is weaker. And then somebody else, somewhere else, who was just on the edge, when the grid falls, now you're making fall. Responsibility. Okay, so you want to understand, what does it mean to be free? What does it mean, freedom? What does it mean, total, real freedom? Is the ability to let go of the physical need to say, this is the seventh year, this is the seventh day, this is the 50th year. On this year, you get the light of freedom in one condition. You let go physical work. But everybody else is making so much money on the weekends. 1 year not to plow the land and not to plant. Are you crazy? How can you survive? How your business can survive? Being honest all the time. When you have the yoke, that reminds me, if somebody remembers in America, years ago, there was this amazing, brilliant advertisement campaign for Hebrew National, which is a kosher, supposedly kosher meat factory. And there, their slogan was, "We answer to a higher authority." Not just the state veterinarian, whatever. We answer to a higher authority. We have the yoke of responsibility. And since then, you ask an American, they are sure that kosher meat is much cleaner. From that campaign. And that's why you have the amount of people who consume kosher meat in America is much, much, much more than the Jews who eat kosher. Like, I think 10 times more, even more. Okay, why? Because so many Americans believe that kosher meat is cleaner. Why? We answer to a higher authority. Which means when you meet a person and you know that that person has values beyond his greed and needs, you trust him more. You're willing to give him more responsibility, do more business with him, whatever. Why? If you realize that the person behaves like this, you know that he is not going to fall in places that other people will fall. To cheat, he has the yoke. He has responsibility. Which means that yoke brings you that light that is giving you true rest. And which means you want to have financial success. There's a condition. You need to be free. You need to be free from the fear. What about money? What if the fear takes over and every person has to go through that test? You know, not being so honest, making some more money. You know, I can make so much more money and I can donate a lot. What's the law? What does the law say? Donating stolen money, is that doing something good to the universe? Not so much. You cannot do a mitzvah by stolen money. Let's say with stolen money you buy a lulav, a trog. You can't shake them. It's not. There's no light in there. Why you cannot steal? Why does it say do not steal? There's no light over there. If there's no light over there, can you do good with that? Not for the long run. Not for the long run. So this parasha is about how do you get to freedom? How do you get to light? Behar, numerical value. Oh, light. Mount Sinai came seven weeks and a day after Passover. The 50th day. The Jubilee. What was on Mount Sinai? We get back to connect to the original light. Behar, the light. Also, this is the same number, 207, Behar, of Reish Zayin, which are the letters of the month of Gemini. Because it's a leap year, we're early. But the Mount Sinai revelation happened on the month of Gemini. All of this, you really want to achieve freedom. When it says freedom on the tablets, you have to accept the yoke of responsibility. And that brings us to, this is one of the most powerful concepts in the Zohar that went to other religions also, is that what does it mean? There is a definition of here. What is a definition of the Son of God? There's a definition which is called the Son of God. Okay? And it says like this. The Zohar says, when you have a person working for you and he has a slave mentality, you have to take care of everything. He will never think just a little bit more than his own, you know, defined responsibility. You know this kind of people. This is something wrong. That's not my job. I won't say anything. Okay? That's a slave mentality. A slave mentality means that so what if that's not working? So what? I just do my job and I get my salary. But a son mentality, says the Zohar, every person who accepts the yoke is a son of God. Why? Whatever happens in this world is my father's. And therefore, it's my responsibility too. Which means I'm in charge. I have to be in control. Whatever you see that needs to be fixed, you do your best to fix. Whatever you see that is wrong, you need to do something in order to get it right. Why? Because as Zohar says, you know, when a son is going around in the factory, whatever is broken, it hurts him. Personally, why? It belongs to my father. This is saying, you know, in Hebrew, for people who are like really, like out of any responsibility, and you tell them, you know, why did you throw the garbage on the floor? And the Israeli answer is like, what do you mean? It's my father's. That's my dad's. It's not my dad's. Why should I care? And what the Zohar says, yes, it's your dad's. Everything belongs to your father in heaven. And you are his son. And because you are his son, you have the responsibility. So the person who takes upon himself the yoke, he is the son of God. But the person who does not want to take responsibility, he's a slave. He will never feel rest because he will never have that light of Bina or Malchut, Shabbat, Shemitah. And what do you say, Shemitah? Shemitah is letting go. But whatever, let go and let God. That's what Shemitah means. Being the son of God means that, you know, you can take care of what you can take care. The moment you understand you did your best, you let God do the rest. And therefore, being in anxiety, if you connect to the light of the Shabbat, the light of the Shemitah, only a free person can get that light. And that light removes the anxiety, removes the pain, all of those emotions that make us behave like slaves. What do I mean a slave? Someone who has no control over anything. He feels, because he feels he has no control over anything around him. The truth is, we hardly have control of anything. But what does it say? Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mirat shamayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven, except from the awe of heaven. When you have the awe, that's something you have to work on. That's something you have to accept upon yourself. Becoming a son of God, that applies to women also, a daughter of God. Becoming a child of God, that means taking responsibility because it's all God's, and every creature is God's creature, which means you have to take responsibility. You cannot think like a slave. You have to think big and responsible. When you choose to think like this, then the flow comes in because you resist your bodily urges and replace them with responsibilities that are bigger than that. And that is the secret of Shemitah and Mount Sinai. To receive the light of Mount Sinai and the law of the universe, which means applying it in, that's it in your veins, to live by the law, and by this to be free, you need to take the yoke and to let go of the lower level of frequency And by this, then you can become the son of the master of everything. And that's no freedom bigger than that. Thank you so much.